Hi, this is Justin Halliday, the creator of Hero Kids, and you're listening to The Family Gamers.
Hey everybody, and welcome to The Family Gamers podcast, episode number 30. Every episode is an exciting episode number for us, I think.
I think so.
Whatever. So we're here today. We are going to talk a little bit about the games that we have been playing with our kids, a review that just went up live on the website yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about winning.
Winning. And losing.
And losing. Hopefully. Gracefully. I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the idea.
All right. I am your host, Andrew, and I am here with my lovely wife,
Anitra. That's me.
All right, honey, what have we been doing lately?
Besides trying to ignore the election, we have been playing a few games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, this past week we played Ticket to Ride with some friends. We introduced it to them. I can't believe they hadn't played it.
That was really a shocker to me. So it was actually my sister and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And they had somehow never played Ticket to Ride before, but they played it and they loved it.
Yep.
Because it's a great game.
Even though your sister lost by a giant margin.
It was poor. I lapped her.
Yeah. She was a little sore about that.
But
she still liked the game and wants to buy it. Right. So she lost
gracefully and I won gracefully, I think. Did I win gracefully?
You won gracefully. Okay. She tried to lose gracefully. It was tough.
She's fine. She'll survive.
It was tough when there's that big a difference in score.
Well,
yeah. But we played Duple, our perennial favorite. The kids have been starting to play a game that we picked up for our daughter's birthday, I believe, called Go Bong,
mm-hmm.
which is a silly name.
Yep. Go Bong is actually kind of neat because it's a game, but it's not just a game. It's like almost like a platform kind of thing. And actually, we're going to be traveling later today. So that's an excellent travel game. So talk about Go Bong a little.
It's completely self-contained. It is one piece of molded rubbery plastic stuff, and it kind of reminds me of the bubble wrap bubbles that it you can sort of pop the bubbles through to the other side, but then you can turn it over and just pop them back the other way.
Right.
So that's the game platform.
Mm-hmm.
Is this one piece. I believe it's a 6x6 grid, and there's a
I think it's like 10x10.
It's a grid. It's a large enough grid to make interesting games. 8x8.
Maybe it's something like that. We'll meet in the middle.
But the game they suggest specifically in the rules is very, very simple. It's a two-player game. You want to be the last person to push down a bubble.
Okay.
You want to be the person who pushes down the last bubble, I should say. So on your turn, you can push down any number of bubbles in a row or in a column. And then it's the other person's turn. And they could push down any number of bubbles in a row or in a column.
Okay.
And as you get closer and closer to the end of the game, it's like, well, if I push down one bubble, that gives me some extra turns. But if I push down these, like, two or three bubbles, maybe I'm going to force somebody into doing something they don't want to do.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's simple strategy, but it does make you work at it when you get a little further into the game, which is good. It scales well to different age levels as well.
Well, I played with our middle child, our 5-year-old son. Mm-hmm. I played Rhino Hero.
Oh, Rhino Hero is fun.
Yeah. So have we talked about Rhino Hero on the show other than maybe mentioning it?
I don't think we have.
So Rhino Hero is this kind of cute game where it's a completely card-based game, but a lot of the cards are like bent in half.
Mm-hmm.
Did they come bent in half, or did you have to?
No,
you have to bend them.
They come with a score mark you should bend them, but they are not already bent.
So the game's very reminiscent of like playing with playing cards and stacking them up to
building a tower of playing cards. Yeah,
And basically the way the game works is you have a handful of cards. There's a deck of cards which are not bent, and you there's like a foundation with, I think, two bent cards facing an opposite direction, so it kind of looks like an X.
Yeah.
And you have to put the foundation down, and then you start, you the first player plays a card, which is like the next floor.
Yeah, it's both a ceiling and a floor.
Right. And so you have to then take two of those bent cards and then put them on the foundation in the orientation that it shows on the foundation, and then put your card on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the card that you put down has another orientation of two of these.
One or two walls.
It's got to have two, right?
No, sometimes it's only one.
Oh, that's horrible. Of these little wall things. And sometimes it has an icon in the corner. And that icon can be all sorts of different things, like once the next player goes, before they go, they have to draw an extra card first, or...
there's a skip a turn one.
Skip a turn, reverse a turn, sort of some of that Uno kind of stuff.
But there's also your little rhino guy.
And some of the icons have the symbol, the rhino. And so what that means is that the next player to go, not only do they have to put the foundation pieces on and hope nothing falls, but they also have to take the rhino and put it on that level.
Yeah.
And so,
in the spot marked.
Yeah, in the spot marked on the card. And so as this thing gets taller and taller, it gets more precarious naturally. And then when you've got this little rhino, wooden rhino token, first of all, you got to get him out from wherever they were before. And then you got to get him
onto
top
the new one
whenever that's assigned. And if you knock the tower over, you are out of the round.
Yep.
And yeah, so it really scales to, I don't know what the official number is. I would say 4 or 5 players probably easily.
Yeah.
But it really is. It's a super easy to understand game. You need one person who knows how to read the rules just to explain what all the symbols mean, and then you never need another person to read.
Yeah, it's very reading light.
Yep. That's a game made by Haba, who makes Zitternix.
Yep. Also known as Keep It Steady.
Yep, Keep It Steady, which is another game that we have talked about on the show and we really like a lot.
We really like it.
I really like their stuff. It's simple. It's well thought out.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's good quality materials, and they tend more towards the kind of skills that balance out well between young and old. Things like memory and balance and things like that.
Right. We did play one other game. You didn't play. Well, you kind of played this other game on over the weekend. You know what I'm talking about now?
Go ahead.
It's one of those games with the dental things that you put in your mouth. There's a couple different ones now with different names. Like you say it, you name it, whatever it was called. We my sister, when she came to visit us, brought the actual Kickstarted one down with her.
What do you say? Maybe
I don't know. It's something like that. It's pretty goofy.
We'll have the full name in the show notes.
Yeah, and so this is a game where you take one of those plastic inserts that keep your mouth open for the dentist, and you put them in your mouth, and you have to read these cards and try to say what's on the cards,
and get your teammates to guess what you're saying.
And it's stupid, but it's pretty entertaining. It was pretty.
It's
hilarious.
The most disgusting like charades game ever.
Well, unfortunately, my side of the family has this genetic mutation where we like drool a lot, basically.
Yes.
So we all had to have napkins with us. It was
that part was kind of entertaining.
It was pretty funny. The whole thing was kind of entertaining. And then our 8-year-old daughter and her friend were both trying to play. It was just a mess of epic drooling proportions.
And lots of laughing.
Lots of laughing. So anything else? I mean, I've been playing more Tomb Raider, but, you know, that's a new thing, so.
Our kids definitely wanted to play some Super Smash with their aunt when she was here.
Yeah, that's a great
game.
That
never gets old.
That does a good job of kind of crossing generations.
Yes.
So, you know,
well,
and I
for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, but it's got...
My mom would not play Super Smash.
Okay. I mean, yeah,
your
mom my
would
mom,
not.
My mom might play
your
Super Smash.
Your mom would not play Super Smash either.
I don't know. But it's got auto handicap, so if you're getting beat a lot, it'll automatically make you harder to beat and stuff like that, which is really, really nice.
That helps.
And then as the kids get better, that hand... I mean, it's by session.
It's automatically calculated
so
per session. Yeah.
You know, it's good. I like that game. That's good.
Yeah. So that's what we've been playing this week.
All right.
Shall we talk about the review that just went up on the site?
Yeah, why not? So we got in a game that is on Kickstarter right now. It'll be on Kickstarter through the end of the week
and maybe about another week.
Monday or so. Called Gimme 5.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might have mentioned it on the show before.
Yeah, we mentioned that like we had played it or we were going to play it,
right.
But we didn't say anything more than that.
So we released the review yesterday. Gimme 5 is an interesting game. Like, it's got a lot of stuff in it that was definitely fun. And the really neat thing about it is it's a game that's designed for up to 50 people.
Yeah, there aren't too many party games that scale well past about 8 people. Sometimes,
right. Sometimes
you can...
12,
nine
maybe,
or 10,
if you're pushing
but
it.
Yeah. Most of the time, once you get into a bigger number, if nothing else, somebody feels left out. Like, they're not contributing.
Right. So the one of the cool things about this game is that everything kind of breaks apart into binary like transactions, binary pairs. Yeah. So it would be me, even in a crowd of 50 people, it's going to be like me against you for a round. And then as people lose, they get kind of assimilated into
the
group.
They join your team.
They beat them, and then you give all your cards to the winning team. And so it's kind of set up almost like I think of like an NCAA bracket kind of thing.
It's sort of like an NCAA bracket.
Every round, the number gets cut.
Except that nobody really loses. You just join the team that beat you, which is neat. Because in the end, you... At the very last round, half the people win the game.
Right. And I mean, as good as that is, I think that, and you know, we talk about it in the review, and I would recommend you go to thefamilygamers.com to check that out. It also kind of creates a problem. And that is that the whole point of Give Me Five is give me five whatever's, give me five of the first 10 elements, give me five Queen songs, you know.
Yeah, give me five of the 12 apostles.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I just, when the groups get particularly large, I mean, those kinds of lists are not terribly difficult
to
generate.
It's not that hard.
Yeah. And we found with a group of five people that we rarely had issues coming up with answers to.
The only ones we had issues with were geography in our group of five. Everything else we had no trouble with at all.
Right. So now if you're talking about 16 people, 32 people, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the breadth of knowledge is going to be wide enough that it's going to be pretty tough to stump everybody.
So, yes, we're complaining that a trivia game was not difficult enough.
So, there's that aspect to it. The other thing that made it a little bit difficult is sometimes some of the lists are kind of incomplete.
Like Queen songs.
Like a list of Queen songs or a list of Katy Perry songs, another one that, you know, that we had seen. Or, you know, five Muppets.
Yeah, I mean, they have sort of a suggested list on the card.
Right, and so the second you start bringing in a third-party source to confirm or deny this information, then you're kind of like, all right, well, what's the point of having the game to begin with?
Yeah.
So those are some of the difficulties that we kind of ran into. But I do think the game is fun. I do think it fits a niche, and there definitely are going to be situations where maybe it helps to have something like that.
It would make a great icebreaker.
Exactly, if you're trying to break the ice with a large group of people or something like that. So definitely go to the website, check out that review. There is a link to the Kickstarter right on the review. So I would say if it sounds interesting to you, it's really close to funding from a money perspective.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a lot of backers. So I don't know if some one person put in a lot of money, which means that they might back. I don't know. It's a weird Kickstarter thing. But I would definitely say check it out if it appeals to you. And again, we also included this link in the review. There is a link to a video explaining how to play the game.
Yep.
So if you are curious, definitely check that out. It is on thefamilygamers.com.
I think now might be a good time to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about winning.
All right, quick break, and then we're going to win. All right, so you made the recommendation for this, and, you know, it's almost funny. So we're sitting here on Thursday after the election, and neither of us voted for either of the two top primary candidates. So
third party all the way, really, baby. Keep my losing streak.
Yeah, we don't really have a dog in the fight, but it is really remarkable to see there's some really upset people. And I think that either way it went, there would have been a lot of really upset people. And
There's definitely a lot of sore losers, but there's also a lot of ungraceful winners.
Yeah, I mean, and really, you know, I don't want to get. I mean, obviously, the rhetoric was what it was, and all that stuff. And I, this is not a political podcast. I'm going to try very hard to make it not a political podcast. But that being said, it did get us to talking about winning and losing, and specifically how that relates to kids and games.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge thing that we wrestle with. If we're going to play games with our kids, we need to teach them how to win gracefully and how to lose gracefully, and what some strategies are that we might be able to employ that will help our kids sort of meter that out a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the common ones, for example, is that whoever wins has to clean up.
Yeah, we've talked about this one on the show before. Right. It definitely reduces the gloating factor of mm-hmm. the winner.
Mm-hmm.
We have once or twice seen one of our children decide partway through a game that they were going to throw the game and lose on purpose because they didn't want to have to clean up, which is kind of funny to watch.
Well, that's a strategy, too. It's just it's just outside of the strategy of
the game.
I
know. There's the issue of being such a sore loser that you give up partway through the game.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the nature of your kid, there's a couple of different ways to handle it. One is to say, okay, if that's the way you feel, you can go do something else. We're not going to play this game with you again until you can commit to playing it all the way through.
Right.
Or you can be a little bit more of a hard line, especially if there's a larger group of people involved. Say, no, you wanted to play this game and you're going to sit here and play it. But that can way too easily turn into a punishment.
Right.
So I try not to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, we've run into situations with our kids where they've maybe not had great reactions with a given game or whatever. And honestly, I think it happens a little bit more with video games, but the same idea holds true to the point where if they indicate a desire to play that game again, that is when it's incumbent on us as parents to remind them
how hard it was of them
that we've run
before.
Through in the past and say, look, we want to encourage you to continue trying and continue to grow because you're going to be better at it this time than last time. But
go into it knowing that you might not do real well.
Right. And we
decide how you want to handle
those
that ahead
things
of time.
Together.
Yeah.
Like, if you are going to play, I'm going to make you finish.
Yeah.
If you don't want to play, that is totally cool.
Yeah.
So.
Obviously, a big one that everyone would say is remember that games are for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Winning is not the most important thing. And like, as adults, we kind of take this for granted, but sometimes we just need to specifically tell this to the kids that we're playing games with. Like, look, if it's not fun, then we don't have to play. But also extending that to if your kid is winning and being a sore winner, you know, ha ha, you know, you're so bad at this, you say, I'm not sure I want to keep playing this with you because it's not fun when you act like this.
Right. And, you know, we can flip that on its head. And, you know, we are we're in the midst of the participation society, right? And, you know, I saw an NFL commercial or a commercial that had some dad and his kid that was playing football. And, you know, they're walking away after they won. And he realizes that his trophy is the same as everybody else's. His son's trophy is the same as everybody else's trophy, even though they won. And he's like, I'm not putting up with this. But so within the context of that culture, and obviously we love our kids and we do want our kids to be, you know, joyful and enjoy what they do. What about letting kids win?
I think it depends a lot on the kid and on the kind of game.
Okay. Explain, because I don't agree with you.
Okay. Well, I think so. I wouldn't straight up let a kid win, and like, but I will sometimes play, shall we say, suboptimally to kind of handicap myself and give them a little bit more of a fighting chance.
Okay.
I specifically think of games like Memory or Checkers or chess, even maybe. I don't have to handicap myself at chess. I stink at chess, but other people might. But the more I've thought about it, it's not a good idea to do that on purpose, because first of all, the kid will think that they're better at the game than they really are.
Sure.
And secondly, if they're really paying attention to the way that you're playing with your suboptimal moves, they'll start copying what you do instead of learning good strategy.
So to kind of counter that, first, I don't necessarily think that your description aligns with what you said, because I don't think that's really letting them win per se. But that premise I agree with in some ways. Sometimes I will color my opinions a little bit with compassion. And not go for some awful move. Sometimes I will say, you know, for example, chess would be a good example for this. Sometimes I will say, look, see how you put this piece over here? This is what I could do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and show them, and this kind of counteracts your concern about learning bad strategy.
Right, right.
And show them, hey, look, I could have done this, but that's if I do that, the game is basically over. So I'm going to put him over here, but you got to be careful to make sure that I can't do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, especially with a two-player game, talking stuff through and saying, maybe you don't want to do that move because if you do that, I can do this.
Right.
Maybe you want to do this move instead.
Right.
I think that can be helpful. And that's not letting them win. That's guiding them in the strategy.
And that kind of the flip side to that is saying something like, oh, you know, hey, maybe this isn't the best move for you. You know, doing something like that where instead of saying, I could do this, but I'm not going to, encouraging them to take a second look at the board.
To work through it on their own. Yeah.
Well, maybe take a look at that knight. You got to be careful of that knight. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Where we're encouraging them. And the level of that focus is that's going to depend on the kid.
Yeah, definitely.
That stuff's going to depend on the kid. But I would not let a child win, nor would I ever let a child cheat, most especially.
Oh, I am totally against cheating. However, when you look at... No. You're going to agree with me.
Okay.
When you look at the very young age range where kids are just learning the idea of rules and turn taking, just in general, I think of our youngest who's 2.5. If I can get him to do anything resembling taking turns appropriately, I'm done. That's my only goal. Like, I don't care if he's actually following the rules correctly or not.
Right. And that's
a different kind of game.
Right. And that almost gets into an extreme version of something else we've talked about a lot, which is rule shifting.
Yeah. I think a big part of this is you need to know going in what your expectations are.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
And your kid does too. I mean, with a two-year-old, yeah, you're just playing around with this game. You're going to try to take turns, and that's going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
But for any kid older than that, even a three-year-old, tell him straight up, like, hey, I think I'm probably, you know, I've played this game before. I'm probably a lot better at it than you. So why don't we do X to make it easier for you or to make it harder for me?
Right.
Rather than trying to kind of throw stuff in halfway where you're like, oh man, he's really not doing well. I'm not sure he gets it. Maybe I should just back off a little.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking of a perfect example of a game we've played a lot recently, which is Battle Goats. That was a prime opportunity for rule shifting and explaining the rule shifting. And the reason why is because the game is primarily mechanics of cards and numbers, but there's also text for special abilities.
Yeah.
And so it was very easy to explain to our 8-year-old and 5-year-old, hey, Claire, our 8-year-old, Asher, 5-year-old, cannot read yet. So we are going to ignore the text on the cards.
We're just going to use the numbers.
And we're just going to use the numbers. And so we shifted the rules down for Asher, but it still allowed Claire to enjoy playing the game.
Yeah.
And to feel special the next time when she played directly with us, because now she could play
with the text. Yeah.
And setting those expectations up front allowed us to work our way through the game in a way that was a little bit, I don't even want to say a little bit more fair for everybody, but in a way that everybody could participate at an equal level.
I think the more I think about this, the more of a fan I am of explicit handicapping rather than trying to play down to a kid's level.
Right. Yeah. I think that kind of thing makes a lot of sense. And there's going to be a lot of games where that kind of thing isn't really possible. You can't really explicitly handicap in chess, although I suppose you could just play without your queen. Like, that'll kill you.
Well, exactly. Something like chess or checkers, we're like, oh, okay, I'm the adult and the better player. I'm going to take some of my pieces away before we even start the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a handicap.
Yeah. I mean, I guess doing those things within the context of explaining why.
Yes.
Is helpful. But also, you know, you don't want your kid to have an inferiority complex either. So,
right.
That's the kind of thing where it'd be like, all right, I'm going to do this. When you want a challenge, I'll be happy to put him back. And it's not because I'm better. It's just because I'm older and I've done it more.
Yep. I would hope that in handicapping and explaining the handicapping, that as our kids get older and better, that then they can have the real sense of accomplishment when they beat us for real, when without any handicap.
Right.
Our 5-year-old beats me handily in memory pretty much every time. And it's one of those, the first one or two times I played with him, I just kind of tried to hold back just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I realized I didn't need to. My goodness, that kid, his memory is fantastic.
Well, good, because I've got a terrible one. So.
Yeah, me too.
So, all right. Is there anything else you wanted to add about winning?
It's so important to try to teach good sportsmanship.
Right.
And it can be so hard. We have one kid who is a very sore winner, and we have another kid who is a very sore loser. And they're equally hard to deal with.
Right.
I suppose the one who's a sore...
Especially since our sore loser is super adorable.
I should say our sore loser is also a bad winner.
Yeah.
He just doesn't get the opportunity to win.
Oh, you said he. You spilled the beans.
I did.
That's okay.
Yeah, they are both difficult. And, you know, one of the
nice things about it, I guess, it's not really nice, is, but I think they're both empathetic enough that we can project the other one's experiences
we can try, yeah,
on each other and say, well, okay, do you remember when you won?
Mm-hmm.
And look at what's happening and how does that feel? Okay, yep. How can we be better about that? And really talking through that and helping these kids understand what it's like to experience the other side.
Yeah.
You know, and at the very beginning, I mentioned the election and all the difficulty that's coming out now with that. And I just kind of, like, I don't so much mind the protesting. It's just there's no effort for reconciliation.
Yeah.
And that's really disheartening, and it makes it difficult. That makes it – it's easy to say to our kids, we don't treat other people the way that we saw, you know, during the campaign. Like, you mm-hmm. see those things. They are not loving. That is not how we are to speak to one another. But it's a completely different thing when we see people being unloving and then responding very, very strongly. And that's been very difficult. And, you know, thankfully, it's only been a couple of days and our kids are in school and they're not seeing a lot of that stuff. But as they get exposed to it, that's where the struggle is really going to come in. But if while our kids are really shepherded under our wings and we're working through these winning and losing things now we can, you know, it's on a small scale.
Yeah.
So now we can look back at these kinds of lessons in the future and say, this is the right way to respond to this difficulty. This is the wrong way to respond to this mm-hmm. difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Good job tying it to why it's important. Go so. You.
But, you know, the only other thing I really want to add to the show this week with regards to winning is this is a great opportunity for cooperative games.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because I mentioned before, one of the ways that I short-circuit my ability to destroy my children in games is by helping them with their own strategy, even when they're playing against me. And with some games like Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, Castle Panic especially, it's really easy to work through a communal strategy to play against the board and really teach those kinds of thoughts and that kind of thought pattern to our children so that when they're doing their own thing, they're able to chain those things together.
Yeah, and the best part of a cooperative game is you either all win together, so nobody is a ungraceful winner because you're just like, yeah, we did it.
Right.
Or you all lose together and you go, and then you can model for your children what gracious losing looks like. Be like, oh, man.
Bummer, dude.
That, I didn't like that. But you know what? I think we still had fun and we can play it again another time.
And then when your kids are older, you can play Shadows Over Camelot and lose and lose
some more. Or
and
Pandemic.
Then, and then when you win, everybody runs around and gives high fives. Because that happened to us once.
Pretty much, yeah. So the only time we won Shadows Over Camelot.
So. No, Pandemic's not as bad as Shadows.
No, it's not. But you still have that feeling when you win of like, you just barely eked it out.
Yes!
Yeah! We did it!
We saved the world, man! So, anyway. So that's it on winning. And all of you Hillary Clinton supporters, be gracious. All of you Donald Trump supporters, be gracious.
Love everybody, man.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, bro.
And that's our show for this week. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Please leave us reviews on iTunes, The Family Gamers. It makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Please check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
And on Twitter, twitter.com/FamilyGamersAA. I am Anitra at The Family Gamers.
I am Andrew at TheFamilyGamers.com. You can go to the website, www.TheFamilyGamers.com.
So, there's one really good way to teach your kids how to be graceful winners and graceful losers.
I think I know what it is.
What do you think it is?
Play games with your kids!